for Bodhisattva vows. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Desires are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. The dharmas are boundless. I vow to master them. The Buddha's way is incomparable. I vow to attain it. Good morning. Many years ago, when I was living at the American Zen College, I guess it was 30 years ago, my youngest son will be 30 in December. The American Zen College there in Maryland has a beautiful campus, and I lived in the old farmhouse, and there were a couple of ponds. May have been one pond at one point, but beavers kind of divided it into two. And it was just a short little walk down a hill from my house, and then the Zendo was up on a hill about 50 yards away. So I was unaware at the time that there was a visiting Zen master. And I did my normal walk down to the pond, and sitting on the edge of the pond, facing away from me, was the Zen master. He had his robe open and he was meditating. And so he heard me coming. I was being very quiet, trying not to disturb him. And he closed his robe back up and sat up. Then he said, "Fish are very happy today." So one of the people that was a longtime member of that Zendo, his name was Mary Kramer. And Mary did a translation of some Korean poems from this Zen master. And I thought I would share some with you today. And my reasoning behind this is that most Zen poems have to do with nature. And this brings us back. Nature always takes us back to what we really are, not what we think we are. All these distractions in life, all these things that we're busy doing, being involved in this human experience, and distracts us from who we really are. Gosan Shin, my original Zen teacher there, used to ask the question at the Dharma talks when new people would show up. They'd say, "Who are you?" Some people would have a hard time answering. Some people would answer right away. "Oh, my name is Bill. I'm from such and such a place." Other people would stumble, have trouble answering. He would smile. And I think that stumbling, having trouble to answer, was not a bad thing, you know, going in and asking that question. This one's titled "Lamp Shadow Bell Sound." I sit quietly in the looking for ox room. A cool wind blows on my face from the open window. The bell rings across the Dharma Tower. A lamp quietly illuminates the lotus platform. It's wonderful imagery. I imagine it's the middle of the night. Here's another one. Eagle is in the sky, fish is in the water. Eagle is in the blue sky, fish is in the water. In this bright and empty world, there is a natural atmosphere. Why do people remain in the red dust world, their entire lives caught up in dreams? Let's have some tea. As soon as we serve our tea here, I will read a couple of more. So this poem is entitled "Il Bong's Tea." Il Bong has one cup of tea. We share tea, sit together in the pine tree breeze. Bright moonlight fills the Zen monastery. we smile together at the blue mountain wind. And here's another one. Pine tree wave, water mirror. The clearing mist reveals a road through the field. It is late afternoon, spring. Bill Bong strolls by himself, hands behind his back. Where streams meet, the water is bright and reflects like a mirror. In the windy valley, pine trees sound like angry waves. So what else is there to say? It's like a breath of fresh air, isn't it? It's like taking a break from worries, concerns, troubles. Seems like we need that a lot these days. Everything seems to be moving and changing around us in ways that we don't understand and don't really like. So let's open it up for discussion. Who wants to start this morning?
I had a feeling about the poetry you just read, and it just felt like the words were way beyond words. It felt eternal. It almost didn't matter what the words were. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Yeah, solving a koan is like that. So these are true words. That's why they're eternal. Not make-believe words. Anything else?
So one of them in particular struck me, reminded me of something that I had heard before. Not a poem, but similar kind of idea. And that was the one about the fish and the bird, the bird in the sky, the fish in the water. And so the thing that I had heard was something like, there are these two fish, young fish, and they're swimming in the Gulf. And they're just playing and enjoying themselves. And they happen upon a larger fish, an older fish, who's swimming by, says to them, "Good morning, boys. Isn't the water beautiful this morning?" And he just goes on. And then one looks at the other and says, "What's this water he's talking about?"
Idea. Perfect exit.
Oh, God. Yeah. And then when you're talking about the other one with the red dust of, you know, kind of creating, at least that's what I understood it to mean.
Yes.
You know, creating the distraction and the confusion and the dust in my own mind. And so brings me back to the practice and how important it is for me to be where I am and appreciate, you know, the magnificence, the beauty of the world, of nature, of how I'm here. And it's a matter of my perception. Am I going to be distracted by worldly events or even my own internal conflicts and my feelings and thoughts? Or am I going to be able to detach and separate from me to the extent that I realize I'm being at peace with nature, because nature's in perfect harmony and balance. And that's home. There's always a place for me.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a time for every season, or a season for every time, a time to cry. And to me, that relates to nature too, right? Like very few things in nature bloom all year. And so for me, hearing all that, it's also reminding myself that like, it's okay for some things to die or for some things to not be good or, you know, good, right? Because it's just all part of it. And I don't, like what Ralph was saying with the detachment, it's looking at it for what it is and recognizing that it's not permanent. It's not a permanent state. It's just a time or season of its being. Mm-hmm. And relating that to nature, but also to myself, mm-hmm. and how I'm growing, changing, and constantly moving, just like nature.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, one of the perfections is patience. And mm-hmm. patience comes because we recognize that causes and conditions and things are always changing. Yes, Peter.
I'm sitting here thinking that sometimes that nature's harmony is not at all what we want. Getting burned out or flooded away or dying because you can't breathe of COVID or whatever. Nature's rough.
Yeah, so my daughter yesterday sent me a text that said, I'm breathing all the smoke. She lives in Colorado, in Boulder, from all the fires in California and up in the Pacific Northwest. And it's all sort of coming. And she says, you know, it's like, I'm breathing all this air. And I said, you think that's something? It's hurricane season. We have red tide and there's shit in the water and you can't swim. Yes. So it's from our perspective, though, isn't it?
But we kind of like our perspective.
Yeah, of course.
Well, it's like you think about if you're in a backyard enjoying a beautiful sunny day, the trees, the nature around you, and in that same moment is a mouse having its guts torn out by a hawk. That exact same moment. So it's really what you, I guess it's, you know, what's in front of you.
No judgment. It's very difficult to separate the dream, the dreaming, from the reality because of perspective. And where does perspective come from? Consciousness. What is consciousness? So, you know, Buddha, many of his teachings are, you know, lists. The three, this, the eight, this, the 12, those, you know, it goes on and on. And the purpose of all that is to sort of take apart these judgments, consciousness, analysis that we make of life based on our perspective from where we're sitting and our identification with this idea of self. So all of this teaching, all these lists are designed to point at no self. From the point of view of no self, what does it look like? Right now, things are difficult. I hear that. Kwantsen Boso, you know, there's a lot of need for compassion. Do no harm. Not let the three poisons dictate our lives. There's lots of examples of how we can approach what's happening around us. without adding to it.
As an early practitioner, how do you know when you're accidentally flirting with nihilism?
How do you know? I guess it's the pain that you're not experiencing because you're avoiding it. From the point of view of Buddha nature, there's nothing to deny. In other words, a smile can't be experienced. A smell, a taste, without having a body, an emotion, you know, how can you experience the pain that someone near you is having if you're isolating yourself from it? You know, isolation is so different from the whole experience. The poems that I read earlier tonight, they're the whole experience. There's nothing nihilistic about any of them. And they're pointing the way. Nihilism is a kind of convenient way. It reminds me of the conservative view of denial. Let's just deny it, pretend it doesn't exist, and keep business as usual. Nihilism to me is business as usual, without really admitting the effect of business as usual. There's no such thing as business as usual. Now, when you're awake, how can you possibly deny anything? When you're asleep, you're asleep. So, you know, I don't know how to talk about having compassion for oneself without having compassion for without being awake. I think being awake and having compassion are the same thing. I don't see a difference.
You know, not just acting, but understanding why you're acting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I often refer to it as intention. The most important part of any action is the intention. Mm-hmm. What is the intention? Do you really know the intention of your actions? Being awake, you know.
Things. Well, what we're supposed to be doing as Buddhists is ending suffering. So if I can be of help, that one thing that tells me I'm probably on the right track.
Yes, well, understanding what suffering is, actually. Some people think suffering is not getting what they want. Some people think suffering is, how come he has a pretty girlfriend and I don't? So intention means being aware of the emotions, the responses, the hows, whys, wheres, everything that's involved in that moment. Meditation teaches us to let go and to stop before we act. That's understanding intention. Then when you decide to act, you can act from wisdom as opposed to ignorance. You know, all these teachings that have been thrown at us are all designed to get us to do these things, to stop, understand the intention of the action, and appreciate where it's coming from, causes and conditions, karma, how we've created our lives. You know, we may have acted poorly in the past and having the consequences of that action now. The what I said before about denial, you know, about business as usual is creating karma and suffering. Business as usual is keep adding more and more development that is over capacity for the environment that you're living in. business as usual is keeping greed and anger and resentment going. So I understand what you're saying. Yes, being a compassionate human being, but how to be that really truly without really causing more suffering also. It's not a simple right and wrong kind of answer. I'm right, they're wrong. You know, you see there's this duality going on whenever we make judgments. So if we hold judgment against ourselves and then, you know, we try to be compassionate towards that judgment. Remorse is not a bad thing. So, you know, we do something really stupid, we're remorseful about it. That's reflective, that's reflection. That's going and saying, I could have done that differently. Next time I will do it differently. What was my intention there? What was I really after? Was I trying to make someone feel bad because they hurt me? You see what I'm saying? There's all this stuff that we carry with us that we don't own appropriately and then let go of it. So waking up is seeing all of our dance and also recognizing that lotus flower doesn't grow by itself in midair. All that dirt, that muck that we've been rolling around it, we can't wake up without it. That's where compassion comes in. That's all right. That's where I grow and learn and change and where my lotus flower can bloom. So I don't try to dislodge from it. There's something going on there that's much larger than what we are perceiving.
Well, I'd like to add to that there's intention and action, but then the third part of that is consequence.
Yes.
And that I think that having what you would think is a good intention and a good action might lead to either a good or bad consequence.
Yeah.
So the idea is to not be attached to the consequences, I think.
Yeah. Yes. Very good. Thank you.
Easier said than done.
Yeah. Always.
Letting go of those expectations.
Yeah, expectations. See, understanding intention is different than having expectations. Expectations happen after the intention is already set in motion. That's where consequences are. Yeah, I mean, you know, the fundamental that we always look at life from our own view, our own perspective. So how to broaden that so it includes everything. All right. Sounds like we may be done. Bye now.